Welcome to Commander Central, episode 34. Today we're going to talk about mind games in Commander, the little psychological or even physical things you do to gain an edge when playing the game. Some people are masters at bluffing. Some know how to exploit obscure rules to get an edge. But in my experience, the thing people do most often is they don't shower or wear deodorant for a week or so before showing up to the game store. And that's really something that's hard to overcome when you're playing.
You know, I haven't seen that in a while.
It's been a while, to be honest. But yeah, and to be honest, that might not be a psychological ploy. That might just be bad hygiene. Regardless, we're going to discuss all the things that you can do to get an edge when you play Commander. I'm Dana.
I'm Max.
And I'm Chris.
This is Commander Central. So how's it going today, guys? I see everyone survived the drive home last night in the blizzard.
Ah, that was easy driving.
Yeah, this morning sucked.
I was kind of surprised because when I left, it was like whiteout bad, but I think it was warm enough during the day that the snow was all melting on the road, so it wasn't like really slippery because it looked like it was going to be nasty, but it wasn't too terrible. We went from like having nice 50-degree weather during the weekend to
below freezing and snowing.
Yeah, because it's Wisconsin. Yeah, so
I think the worst thing that happened to me was walking out of the store last night, and there's that curb right there.
Right.
And there was so much snow, you couldn't tell where the curb was. And I took a step and went, thunk.
Oh. And then it's just wet slush, too. Yep. So you're probably like, just soak your shit. Yeah, that was. Well, you were there till like 2 a.m., too, again, last night.
Playing Phase 10, which I almost caught up. I was stuck on Phase 4 for like 10 rounds and ended on Phase 9. Come back for the ages.
And Max was there. You went to leave at like 9:30 and started your car.
Yep.
And then I left at 10:30 and your car was still started. You were still there. Your car was still running in the parking lot.
Well, I stuck around to watch the 5-player game we were in for 2.5 hours to see how it ended. And it went on for another hour and 10 minutes after Dana left.
That game was rough. So 5-player games are always a challenge, particularly if no one's playing like a fast deck.
Yep.
No one was playing fast decks.
No, and 4 blue decks against a white deck.
Oh, it was just a grind. And then the guy at the end of the table, Austin, I believe that's his name, right? So he was playing a very like grindy, white, slow deck. And he's a very non-aggressive player anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea. So he's not doing anything, for one. And number two, I can't tell anyway. Because for starters, he's sitting
at the end of 10
feet away. And then all his, what kind of sleeves are those he has in his cards? Like, he has shaded sleeves.
Dragon Shield made perfect fit sleeves that are tinted on the back for flip cards.
Okay, so you can't see them through the, okay. Yep.
Well, he decided to put the tinted side on the front because it looks really awesome.
If you're sitting next to him, it
yes.
probably does. But from like 6 feet away, he's playing black cards. Like, he has 10 cards in front of him, and they're all just black, blank-faced cards.
It reminds me of those computer screen blurs that you can put on your monitor, so you can only see the screen straight on. It's like, I was sitting next to him, I'm even like, what does that say? I don't know what that says.
His cards are all wearing sunglasses. Luckily, he wasn't doing anything all game, so it didn't really matter very much. But
and he made it to the final, too.
All I know is I kept hearing Sword of Vengeance gets equipped, and I'm like, and then, okay, I know what Sword of Vengeance does.
But then
does.
He didn't attack with it. He's like, I'm equipping Sword of Vengeance, and then I'm not attacking past the turn. I screwed up that game. I got overly aggressive and then painted a target on myself too soon. In a 5-player game, don't make the move unless you're going to win.
Yep.
And I prematurely made the move and got slapped and couldn't recover.
Yeah.
And then did you get knocked out first, Max?
I did.
You didn't even do anything that game, neither.
No, because my Brago got countered the one time I cast him. And I was just going to be like, okay, I'm one of 4 blue decks. I'm not going to play my general the rest of the game and just coasted by as long as I could till I got kicked in the face by the mono white deck.
And we all spent a lot of resources keeping each other in check, too.
Yep.
So that's always. I mean, it wasn't a fine game. It wasn't like it was a boring game where no one did anything, but it was just tough to get ahead and it was slow.
Very slow.
So were there any other games you guys played last night? Chris didn't play much because you're getting all ready for Modern this weekend.
Yes, I am.
So we'll touch on that in a minute, but. Is there anything else worth talking about for games?
Nope.
Yeah, I mean, I played a good recce game. And
we'll talk about that one later, too.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, I played in that game, too. I forgot about that. That was when I was going to throw your deck in the garbage, Max.
Yep, and then you saw a Snapcaster.
Like, oh, there's a Snapcaster in here. I shouldn't throw it in the garbage.
Well, no, I was going to throw it in the garbage because Max like, oh, take out the steam vents and the sulfur falls and the time stop and the time warp or something like that, whatever the other one was. And I was like, okay, I can have the rest of them then, right, when I had to throw it in there? He's like, wait, why?
I haven't touched that deck in a very long time, so.
I didn't know it was even still together. We're talking about Mizzix, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, I didn't even know it was still together.
Only reason it is I needed to have both of my archives have three decks in them, so they were like balanced in my bag. I'm
so
like,
that's,
okay,
that's
I guess
what
it's,
saved it.
It's staying together until I part something else together.
Well, I will mention this. I have a couple small notes here that aren't necessarily game related, but so we talked about tutors last week, and one of the tutors we talked about was Guided Passage, which is the three color is a
teamer.
And I had two different people last night at the shop. Be like, one's like, I put it in this deck, and he's like, I didn't know it existed. I want to build it. And the second person was like, I want to build a teamer deck just to run Guided Passage. So I'll have to report back if anyone had any real good luck with that. But
yeah,
we at least got two people running Guided Passage.
There we go.
And I wanted to mention one card. I just wanted to make this note because we talked about it when it was in Hour of Devastation. And that's Hour of Revelation, which is the board wipe.
The white one?
The white one where you can do it for three. I had it cast on me for some reason like three different times in the last
week.
Probably the last week. Every time it's devastating. And it's three mana. And not that we didn't say it was going to be good, because we all did.
Mm-hmm.
But like just seeing it in play, that card needs to get played more. I understand it's tough to hit triple white in three colors or more colors, but like, man, that just changes the board state radically for three mana.
Yep.
And it's almost always three, particularly in multiplayer. I mean, you're not casting it if it's going to cost. If it's going to cost the full six, you're not.
Where
the
cast route
stuff.
Or something
right.
like that.
Yep. Or you just don't care because the board state in a four-player game, that's like you're at ascend by turn three.
Yep.
Or turn two a lot of times.
Well, it's non-land permanent, so
yeah,
that's what hung
it
me up
non-land.
The one
yeah.
time I saw it get cast.
But still, I mean, it's really easy to hit that mark. And
oh, yeah.
So anyway, I wanted to mention that because we liked the card, and just seeing it in play really kind of drove home how strong it was. So... anything else before we move on here?
I don't think so.
All right. Any exciting social media?
It's been mostly... Everyone's talking about Dominaria because it is coming and it's coming with a vengeance.
So that'll be next week's show. I think we're going to do a two-parter on Dominaria.
Fun.
So
we almost have to.
And I'm pumped. Actually, you say fun, but like we're all legitimately excited
yeah,
for it. It's a fantastic set
yes.
so far.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's halfway revealed and it's the best set I've seen in... I don't even know how long.
A very long time.
But it's probably going to be a good standard environment, too, it looks like. I mean, there's a lot of, like...
Since Return to Zendikar, it's the best set.
Yeah, at least. If not... Return to Zendikar. I thought you meant Return to Ravnica. Like, it's the best one since Return to Ravnica.
It is.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yes.
Even at half released, I'm looking at it. There's a bunch of uncommons that are ridiculously strong. But we'll get to that.
We're going to have to talk about those, because there's some sure. very interesting... Are we going to play some Peasant Commander, my friends? We'll talk about that next week, won't we?
They're not even they're strong in legit Commander, let alone Peasant.
Yep.
So, yeah, we'll get into that next week. Max, any news for us?
No. Again, it's all about yeah. Dominaria, and we'll be covering that next week.
So, speaking of all the social media news and everything, if you have anything you need to say to us, you can find us many different outlets. Twitter, at CMDR Central. Facebook, search us, CMDR Central. YouTube, CMDR Central, and online at cmdrcentral.com.
And of course, we're on Patreon by searching CMDR Central as well. And we've been talking about this the last couple weeks, and we are ready to announce some changes we're making to our Patreon. We are adding a $2 pledge level, and that will get you the shout out that gets you at the $1 level. But it's also going to gain you access to our chat program called Slack. So it's extremely similar to Discord if you ever are involved with that. We just use this one it was something I was already using in other areas of work.
Yeah,
and
I
we
am
just
too.
Adapted it to the podcast.
But I mean, we're in there talking about whenever a new card comes out, someone posts it in there and there's conversation about new things and just anything EDH related. There's a few smart people in there and me talking about EDH. Most of the time. So,
are you implying you're the smartest or the not smart?
Feel free to take that any way you want to take that, because I probably could go either way depending on the day.
I'm not lumped in this category because I don't talk much on Slack.
Chris does not.
Don't fear the Patreon pledges who are already pledging to us. You will get automatic invites to the Slack no matter what. All this will roll out when you guys are hearing this episode on Monday the 9th.
Yes. We also have some contest information.
We do. Starting this month, so when you guys hear this on the 9th, we will be doing a drawing at the end of every month for some cards. This month we're kicking it off with the Buy a Box promo from Dominaria, the Fire Song and Sun Speaker.
So the card you can't get anywhere else unless you buy a box, basically.
Right.
It's not going to be in a pack.
We will be giving that away to one lucky drawing winner, and there are some multiple ways you can win. By being a Patreon subscriber, every level gets you a certain amount of votes. Entries, I should say. The $1 level gets you one entry. The $2 level gets you two. The $5 gets you four. And the $10 level gets you six entries a month. Along with that, if you like any of our tweets where we use the specific contest hashtag, and this month the contest hashtag is Bonfire and Sunday, and we grabbed that from
the Chinese translation.
So we'll be using that periodically as we tweet stuff, whether it's about our episodes or our EDH night, or just, hey, we're here at a tournament supporting friends, hashtag Bonfire and Sunday. So as long as you like that tweet and retweet it, you'll get entries into the contest as well. And then at the first episode of every month, we'll announce the winner.
Sounds good.
And of course, the prizes for these contests are supported and donated by our local game store, D20 Gaming, here in Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Thank you very much, D20 Gaming, for that. Anything else? Well, you guys, actually, I mentioned it before, but we might as well give a shout-out to SCG Milwaukee this weekend.
Yep.
Because Chris and Max are both going to be there in different...
This past weekend,
I guess you'll
technically.
Yeah, I guess
it'll be the 7th and 8th of April, so the Saturday and Sunday before you guys hear this.
So Chris will already have won SCG Milwaukee by the time you listen to this podcast.
If I make the top
and
eight,
Max
I would
will
be
probably
happy.
Have already been arrested for looting.
So speaking of that, I got to talk about this. So we have a nice young man going with us.
I'm not going to get him in trouble.
And I told him if he makes day two and I don't, I am going to that night go to every store I can, Walmart, Target, whatever. I'm going to find a foam finger and face paint. And his entire day two, I'm going to stand behind
him. Follow him around?
Just follow him around as his, like, cheer squad.
Nice.
Well, you are lucky because we're going to be in Milwaukee, home of the Brewers, and baseball started, like, 2 days ago.
Yeah,
so
you should be able to find a foam finger pretty easily.
No problem.
Yes.
If not, we'll get you that cool brat suit they wear when they run the bases.
We will get pictures of that up on the website, absolutely, or up on the YouTube, whatever, on Twitter.
And next week, I'll have stories to report of playing with hopefully some of our listeners.
Yeah, you've been in contact with a few people.
Yeah.
Very cool. I'm looking forward to hearing about that. I have, before we get into the actually main show topic, I have a question for you guys or for any listeners out there about a deck of mine. So this is a mini, like, two-minute deck tech question.
I know where Recky is. Don't worry. I haven't lost him yet.
So, well, it kind of involves that deck slightly, but it's mostly my Mina and Den deck. I have no flyers in Mina and Den. And I have two in my Recky deck. So I'm really vulnerable to any flyers coming in. And Max is an all-flying deck. And there's at least one Angel Tribal deck in our meta. And, you know, flying is just the most common form of evasion. And it just wrecks me. So I've been trying to figure out how to deal with that. And for the most part, my plan has just been to try to kill the person with the flyers or remove the flyers. But you can't always do that.
Nope.
It does you no good if a Sigard is out or if there's Lightning Greaves on that, you know, Aurelia or something. So I can run like Hurricane kind of effects to destroy flyers, but, you know, if it's a suited up Sigarda or something like that, you know, it's 10 damage everybody to get it done. That's an entire turn worth of mana. So I don't know if I want to do that or not. The other alternative I was looking at is two cards. Both of which are kind of old. The first is Chaos Sphere, which I think was out of Mirage. It's an enchant world for two and a red, and it says creatures with flying can only block creatures with flying, and creatures without flying have reach. And it's red. So in that Mina and Den deck where I can't deal with flyers, it gives all my guys the ability to block flyers, and it makes other people's flyers unable to block my guys.
Okay.
So that's very useful. The problem with that one is it affects everything. So, like, if it's in play, the person to my right who isn't even attacking me, their flyers suddenly lose flying. And even if they weren't going to swing my direction, then it impedes their ability to hit the third or the fourth player.
Okay.
So that card becomes a target for other people because it might screw up their plans. So the second alternative I thought about running is Spider Silk Armor, which is green. And I could also put this one in Recky if I so choose to. And it's two and a green, so same CMC, and it just gives my creatures reach and plus zero, plus one.
Yep.
So I can just block flyers then. So it's not as good because it doesn't give me any kind of evasion, at least in that regard it isn't as good, but it does give me a little bit of defense, but it's also not something that somebody else is going to want to remove because it doesn't screw up their plans, unless they were already trying to hit me anyway. Like, I understand if you're going to hit me, you want to remove it, but like, Chaos Fear screws up your plans for hitting a third party, that one doesn't.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Or do I just keep winging it and just like being like, well, I'm just going to lose to flyers and I just got to deal with that. And hope I have a Beast Within, or hope I have a Chaos Warp, or hope I have a Song of the Dryads or something like that. First of all, what's your opinion?
I like the Sphere. I really do.
Number one, it's an old card. So I like the fact that it's an old card that no one's going to see coming. Max, what do you think?
Why not run them both?
I think that's too much, because I think if you have both, they're dead draws. Or you don't need them both.
But
I could run them both, but I don't think I need it that. I think one is enough.
I really like the Sphere. I'm dead set.
Yeah,
if I were
going
to play one, I would play the Sphere over anything.
I 100% agree. The Sphere is, it's like you said, it's old. It's really cool. People aren't going to know it. And it's just a great card for that deck.
Yeah.
And our meta. It's a really good meta card for us.
Yeah, right. We do have a lot of flyers in our meta, I feel like. So I think that would be useful.
You're the type of player that you know how to play. Like, a new player, if they played that Sphere, it would be, let's just jam this thing as early as possible. Whereas you're going to sit on it until you have a reason
to play
it.
Until I need to play it.
Yes.
There's two other cards. There's Gravity Well, which is a green one that basically removes flying from creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And Gravity Sphere out of Legends is the same thing in red. The problem with those is, again, they affect the whole board state. And I'm like, if I'm going to do that, I might as well run Chaos Sphere because it does more for me.
Yes.
So it was down to those two. So you think I should give Chaos Sphere a try?
I would give it a try, at least for sure in Mina and Den. Recce, I'm not so sure about because you do have a Chroma's Memorial.
Yeah, I do
that.
You
can
get
to
unregular. And there's a legendary vehicle, the Weatherlight, new Weatherlight, I'm going to put in that deck out of
Dominaria,
which has flying, so I'm going to get one more flyer in there. And I already have two in that deck, so that'll give me three versus none in Mina and Den.
Yeah.
So I might just let Recce go. You know, it's kind of an aggressive deck anyway. Maybe that's part of the fun. I can't deal with flyers if I don't have my Dragon or
a Chroma's Memorial.
Right.
Or Hope.
It is what it is. Whereas Mina and Den, I just have nothing, and I maybe need to try to tweak that a little bit.
You do have one thing in there.
What do I have?
It's a star elemental out of
it has reach.
Yes.
You're right. Yep.
Zendikar's
with land or when it ETBs, you search a land or something like that.
Yeah, that's right. Six mana.
Yep.
Out of Zendikar or Innistrad, second Innistrad set maybe.
I think it was returned to Zendikar.
But okay. So anyway, any feedback from anybody out there, I'd appreciate as well if you have any suggestions or ideas or thoughts on that. That's it for me, I think, on that subject.
I'm ready to go.
All right.
Let's do this.
Let's talk about mind games in Magic. So there's a lot of stuff to cover here, but this is kind of, like, this isn't like a list we can go down and be like, okay, let's talk about this color or talk about this thing. We kind of just got to throw things out there. So let's start throwing stuff out there. I'm going to start by telling a really brief story that got me thinking about mind games in Magic. So the first setup, and I'm going to post these two videos to Twitter and to Facebook when we finally go live. The first one, if you guys don't know, there's a pitcher named Randy Johnson. I don't know if you know who he was. He's been retired for a few years now.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone should know Randy
Johnson. You should.
Man.
You better.
Long hair, like 6'6".
He looks like a scarecrow. He looks like a scarecrow from a horror movie.
Right?
So there's a video clip of him, I think it was a spring training game, but where he hit a bird in mid-flight throwing a pitch, and it's like a cartoon. It's like a burst of feathers, and it's gone. There's nothing there after this explosion of feathers. So he's a scary dude, and he throws scary hard, and there's a video of him vaporizing a bird. So the second video clip I'll mention is there's an All-Star game where many, many years ago, where he uncorks a pitch, first pitch against John Kruk was the batter, and throws it 8 feet behind him, just like wildly out of control. So for the rest of his at-bat against Johnson, Kruk is not even, he's standing like 4 feet back from the plate, and he's not even, he strikes out badly because he wants nothing to do with him. So when I played baseball many years ago in high school, knowing this about Randy Johnson, like seeing that video clip of that, I had a friend of mine who was a pitcher and started doing that in every game. When like the first batter would get up or something, his like first pitch, he'd throw, during his warm-up pitches, he'd throw a couple, he would just uncork 10 feet behind the batter or something.
Wow.
Particularly during a warm-up, he'd uncork a three or four of them. And then I played first base, so I'd go over to him and, like, we'd, like, fake, like, man, settle down. You're going to hurt somebody again. And we'd do this whole thing. And the batter would get up in his first pitch. Again, he'd, like, just let it fly. And after that, everyone was scared as hell of him. So it was, like, it was worth giving up that one ball and a few balls during, like, warm-up. People were terrified of getting hit. So, like, that was his mind game he did in high school baseball, was to, like, imitate Randy Johnson. And it worked. So I have always thought about that in, like, other things. And in magic, I don't know what you would do in magic to do that, but I'm like, what a perfect mind game to do to somebody.
I'm in the mind of a young man in our shop already with something similar. So
that's, I guess that's equivalent of not showering and showing up with BL. That's what that is. Okay, so the first thing beyond just talking about that story I will mention here is one of my favorite mind games in Magic. And what sets this up is I can be kind of a sloppy player because I get distracted by, like, talking to people, because we have a lot of people that we're friends with at shop. So we're either BSing about whatever, or, you know, I get a text on my phone or something's going on and I'm just not paying attention and I'll make mistakes. But sometimes I pretend I've made mistakes that I haven't made. And I mentioned this on the show last week where I, you know, a guy asked if I had trample damage. I'm like, oh, yeah, me and Den, I can spend a red and a green and bounce a land and give it trample. And he's like, oh, you don't have a red free. I'm like, oh, man. Like, that was me faking I had made a play mistake. So that's one of my favorite ones to do because it's already been set up by me actually making sloppy play mistakes. So that's one thing that I do as a mind game is I, like, try to set up, because it really works if somebody else notices. Like, if you point it out, like, oh, I screwed that, that doesn't work.
Yep.
But if you let them walk into it, that's where that bluff works. So that's one I want to say that is a really useful mind game to play is to fake the play mistake. So that's my first contribution. What do you guys have?
I don't like showing my... So I sleeve all my decks in the same color sleeve.
So you're using the Petrol Blue, I think,
yep,
right now,
Petrol
right?
Petrol Blue, okay. Dragon Shields. And I've gotten in the habit, because of Chris, of not showing my commander. But, like, I'll sit there and shuffle.
That's how you're supposed to play. I'm going to let everyone know that when you play, you're supposed to leave the commander face down, shuffle, and then once everyone's ready, you flip them all face up.
You reveal at the same time, right.
Yep. And you're not supposed to do that until after mulligans have been decided.
Right. So typically, though, I'll sit there and shuffle my deck, and people will see, like, oh, you're playing, oh, look, there's green-white, you're playing Dromoka, or blue-white, you're playing Brago. But lately, I've been really working on not letting people see me shuffle.
Okay.
So this happened this past weekend. We were at the doctor's house.
Okay.
And he was like, what deck are you playing? I'm like, you'll see. And I just sat there, and he's like, oh, I see. You're not going to tell me what color. Oh, of course, all your decks are sleeved the same. I'm like, yeah, nice. You'll find out. And then, so he's like, okay, I guess I'll play this deck. Just, I'll try this, my best deck. I'm like, oh, I'm playing Tajik. Like, okay.
Which is not your best deck.
It won, though.
Nor is it anyone's best deck. But yeah, you did win.
I did win with it.
First game. Okay, I like that. So you're just trying to keep as much information hidden as possible.
Yes.
That's useful. How about you, Chris? What do you got?
Always leave the one white mana free. Always.
There might be a condemn, or there might be a
swords
mana type.
Or a path or anything. And I'll be honest, 70% of the time I have it in hand anyways. But that doesn't mean I'm always going to have it.
So that's the bluff. We'll talk about the bluff here, because there's a lot of different bluffs,
yep.
But that's the bluff.
Yep.
So that's when you fake having
all the
time a spell in hand, or you have a spell. So you want to basically bluff somebody into thinking you can do something that you can't do. But you have to occasionally have it. Like, if you bluff all the time and you never ever show it, no one believes you.
No.
Nope.
But so you have to actually
like
have it once in a while.
Wolf.
So is there anything you do on a bluff to help sell it?
I say it.
You just say it, like, with authority, like, with confidence.
Yeah,
if you,
like,
come at me, I've got a condemn in hand, you're going to lose your creature.
I'm going to kill it. And I'm going to show and be like, I have one white mana free. You come at me, it's going to die. So it leaves them to think, well, it could be condemn, could be path, could be swords, whatever.
Nice.
I actually did that this past weekend. Someone was going to debate swinging at me with Gishath. I'm like, I have one white mana open, and I have one card in hand. And I actually pointed the card face down at Gishath. I said, don't do it. Don't do it. And he's like, okay, I passed my turn. And then it got around to me, and we were the final two in the game. I'm like, I'm going to play this creature.
But it's, that's good though, like, to let them know you're bluffing, because then when you're not bluffing and you want them to swing into the bluff,
yep.
you've got it too. So you need to reveal it sometimes as well.
Because I think I drew a land, so I'm like, land for turn, creature. He's like, oh. I'm like, and win.
Yep, that's a mistake I see a lot of people make where, like, when they tap out a lot of lands or something, I always leave certain select lands untapped to present that it could be any of one of these X number of cards that could be in the deck. Make people think. Now, me being more of a competitive player, like constructed formats, that comes into play more, whereas Commander, a lot of players don't even pay attention to that. They just go blindly and just brrr everybody, and you're just like, okay, die, I guess.
Well, if I'm playing blue, I don't have anything to do and I'm passing the turn, regardless of whether or not I have a counterspell, I try to leave, particularly if I have islands, I try to leave two islands side by side right there, conspicuously untapped. For anyone who even remotely looks over, they're going to see that there's two islands. I even fan the lands out away from it a little bit.
I was going to say that. You don't just, but you separate them. You make sure you separate them and make sure everybody notices that
there's
moving these two over here.
There's two blue available for any kind of counterspell.
Yep.
And I have them sometimes. I have counterspells. Mm-hmm. I hit Max with two of them back to back last night.
Yep. We battled.
And
I lost.
Probably shouldn't have. Actually,
I think that was a mistake during
that
game.
I overextended. But, yeah, I intentionally leave that there so people are like, well, there's two blue. That's something that you have to think about whether that's available.
And I think, fought over an austere command of all things. I was so confused.
Well, I had already – that was a sunken cost fallacy situation where I had already put so much of my hand on the board. I had Metamai out, and I had, I think, two other Sphinxes in play and a bunch of Mana Rocks. I had so much invested that I'm like, I got to go all in at this point because – And then I countered it, and then you came back with something else, and I had to counter it again. I can't remember what the sequence was.
I don't even remember either. But
I countered it, and you packed and negationed it, I believe. And then I had to, and I swan song your pack or something.
Yep.
Delay. I delayed
his rift. Well, that was the Cyclonic Rift that you guys were fighting over.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that was, we both sunk too much resources into that back and forth.
Yep.
And I laughed with the three counter spells in my hand, letting you guys fight over it.
You had no mana, though. You were just sitting there like, whatever. You had no board presence, so you weren't worried about the austere command.
Well, as part of the bluff, too, I think genuinely everybody, you should just grab a few of your lands when someone makes a move on you or does to do something and, start to turn them and then stop and bring them back. Just do that 3 or 4 times every game. So people, always think you're debating making a move and then don't make it.
Yep.
Because if you only ever go to tap your lands when you've decided officially to do something, that... No one ever believes it, but if you go to make a move and stop making it 3 or 4 times, then when you legitimately change your mind, they don't know what that is then. Because there are times you go to counterspell something and you're like, man, do I want to hit it? And you think about it for 3 seconds and stop.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, no, I'm going to let it pause. So that happens sometimes. You legitimately do that. Well, you can't cover for that unless you fake that sometimes too. So I think that's one people need to do. A lot of the bluffs you need to set up in advance. You need to plan that stuff out. And I think that's one you should just generally kind of bluff that you're going to make a play and then don't.
Yes.
I do something similar with Dromoka. I randomly throughout the game, whether if I have a full grip of cards or one or two, I'll start monkeying with my graveyard and I'll start organizing it as if Seasons Past is in my hand.
Oh, nice.
So it'll look like I'm up 0, 1, 2, and if no one's paying attention, I'll start counting out loud and making it obvious so people think I'm doing something, and then everybody freaks out and tries to kill me, and I have like a board wipe or something instead.
Actually, that's a good one. I like that. Well, because one of the things too is we've got a friend who doesn't play much anymore, but he had a zombie Thraxamundar deck he played for a long time that ran Living Death and Living End and Zombie Apocalypse, I think. So we had a lot of stuff that would bring stuff back from the graveyard, you know, in mass. But he always be like, can I see what's in your graveyard? And then I'm like, oh, well, clearly next turn it's coming. And it always did. He never bluffed that.
No.
Nope.
But in saying that, maybe once in a while you should just ask, hey, can I see your graveyard? Just to, keep people on edge. Even if you have no graveyard interaction or no way to steal stuff at all, just ask to check to just keep people honest.
I don't ever ask. I just kind of lean over the table and look, and then sit down and look at the player, and then look over the other players, and just try to get in their head.
Well, now Max mentioned talking about a recce game last night, so this is probably a good chance to mention that, because you bluffed me without trying to bluff me in that game.
I guess. I didn't realize I did it until he told me about it today.
So that was with Dromoka, your Dromoka deck.
I swung into you with Dromoka, who was a 5 a 5-7.
Yep.
And you had a Jugen out, so I was just expecting, cool, I'll kill the Jugen.
Or I won't block, one of the two.
Or you won't block, and I'll still gain some life. Well, I forgot Recky had the Jit on him with three counters. So you removed one, gave Dromoka -1/-1, and you did it again. So, okay, cool. Jugen wins the fight. So and then I berserked.
Right. Without thinking through the ramifications.
Right. And you're like, okay, well, I think we ended up trading.
I was in Oaks. I was able to
you gave it +2.
Yep. +2, which survived.
With the last counter off the Jit.
Yep. So Dromoka died, but I gained the 6 life.
Right.
And what, you thought I had a board wipe because I just...
Well, so after Dromoka dies, it goes back to his hand. And then I see Max fiddle with him, and he's looking at his hand, and he goes and grabs 4 mana specifically.
Yes, he did too.
And I don't know what you were thinking about casting, but you started turning him, and you stopped and turned him back and passed a turn. And I'm like, oh, he almost cast a Wrath of God right there. And then I'm like, well, that's why he swung with Dromoka. Because he was like, everyone else has a board state, and if I lose Dromoka, no big deal. I might as well get some damage and some life out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then board wipe. So I'm like, that's why he did that. I'm like, all right. Then he went to bluff it. I'm like, he was going to do it. And I'm like, he's going to wait one more turn and let everyone else throw a few. Because you gained a life. And I figured, like, okay, he's up life. So he doesn't care if people swing back at him and he's back down to like 35. Who cares?
Right. Yep.
If you get to kill 4 more creatures or something. So I'm like, oh, he's got a Wrath of God or Day of Judgment or something in hand. So it came back around to me. And I played like a Mana Rock or something and passed a turn. Because I'm like, I'm not going to play 2 creatures into that Wrath that I know is coming. And it never came.
Nope.
Yeah, and then you played some Angel after
that. Yeah. It came back around. I think Sigarda, maybe.
Yep.
I think it was Sigarda. I'm like, well, now I'm confused. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't have a Wrath. So I still waited one more turn. I'm like, well, all right, I'm going to play it safe one more turn. So it came back to me, and I think I ramped something or whatever it was, or cast a Harmonize and passed a turn again. And it came back to you, and I think you played Dromoka again. And I'm like, okay, well, he's clearly not going to Wrath now, so I guess I can go back to playing creatures. But you bluffed me without intending to bluff me.
I'm the master of the bluff.
I guess. But like really, like myself. There's a perfect example, though. He screwed me up for 2 turns without even trying to do it. But like, had you tried to do that, I mean, who knows how often you can do that in games by just bluffing that.
Probably never again.
Well, it also only works if someone's paying attention.
Yep.
Like, you were watching that, too, and I think you were having mana problems. So
I was stuck on 4 lands.
Yeah, so you couldn't respond.
Yeah. At that point in the game, I was just hoping someone would kill me so I could just go throw that deck in the garbage and get that Snapcaster out of
right.
it. But
if no one's paying attention, I guess the bluff doesn't matter.
Right.
But if they're paying too much attention, you don't even have to bluff. You can just let me bluff myself.
I guess. Yes.
So how about like the straight up lie where you're like, okay, I've got this in my hand and this in my hand. How often does that actually work?
I usually don't do it. I try to be the honest player, and I will give you an instance as of last night. When Council's Judgment was played, it went around the table to the new player.
Yep.
And I literally told him, being the completely honest person I am when I'm playing in Commander with multiple people, that I was just as much of a threat as you were, Dana.
Sure.
So his logical choice was to take something off of my board so everybody lost something, which is what he ended up doing. So I try not to lie when I'm playing. Now, that's a verbally lie.
Sure.
Mentally lie, I will do it all the time.
So here's one I do in that situation. I didn't do it with that Council's Judgment, but with like a Council's Judgment or something like a Return to Dust, I will oftentimes, if I have 2 things and I want one of them, particularly if it's not really available, like next turn I'm going to use this creature to do a thing, but it doesn't look super scary right now, I will oftentimes do like a, you know, if I'm being honest, this thing I have right here is probably the biggest target, to get them to hit the second thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then usually the person won't hit the other thing because they're like, I'm not going to pick on you and hit 2 of your targets. So you can bluff someone away by being the nice guy. Hey, man, I'm just trying to help you out. And then particularly if you're like, you might as well hit me with that thing. I probably am the best person for it. Then they absolutely are like, thanks, man. Thanks for being honest with me. I'm going to hit him with the other one. Like, that works all the time.
Yeah, and when he did that Council Judgment, he hit my Fevered Visions, which I could have cared less that was going bye-bye.
Right.
But which he should have left for himself because he's playing mono white.
Right.
But.
Yeah, that was great draw for him.
Yep.
And me.
and you wasn't taking damage because of Gideon's Intervention.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was cool. I thought that was a really awesome play. Max is dropping Gideon's Intervention. Because at first I'm like, why are you naming Fevered Visions? Are you going to bounce it to his hand so he can't cast it? And I'm like, oh, it doesn't deal damage to him. Like, oh, man.
Yep, that's why I had to read the card too. I'm like,
It's Max's own personal howling mind sitting there. That was really slick. Let's see. What else do we have here for interesting things? So I heard a good story last night, and I actually looked it up after our friend Justin told us a story he heard somewhere. So I did a search for it and found it on Reddit about a tournament where somebody called a judge over, I think it was in Modern, and then said, "Judge, can I use the pithing needle to name Dark Confidant?" The judge like gave him an answer, so he, okay, and then played his pithing needle, and the person he was playing against let it resolve because you can't use it. It's not going to do anything about Dark Confidant. And then, but once it resolves, it's done. It's in play.
Yep.
And then you pick your target, and you pick the person's uncracked fetch land.
His three polluted deltas, I believe.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I was like, man, I don't think I've ever seen, because number one, you don't have a judge you can work with.
Yes.
But like, that's a really good bluff too when you like, if you can redirect someone that stealthily in a game. I don't know if I've ever seen anything quite like that.
There's still the ultimate bluff ever made by the one and only LSV.
Well, I wanted to, okay, so this is on video,
I'm sure
too.
We're going
to
get to it.
So let's tell the story. You it pretty well. You want to tell it?
So basically, from my understanding of it, is that LSV was in a legacy tournament. I'm not sure what company was throwing it.
Yeah.
But he was playing Storm. Now, anyone who's familiar with Storm and Legacy, you don't actually play Tendrils of Agony inside of your main deck. You play it in your sideboard.
Right.
And you wish for it. Well, he went to wish for it in game one and realized he didn't put it in his sideboard.
He had, like, it had got taken out somehow and he replaced it with whatever it was, Frantic Search or something.
Something
like
that. So he plays the wish and he's up, you know, Storm count 10, whatever, and the guy just scoops. So literally through the whole tournament, this is how every game played out. He would go and he'd go to wish, and they're like, "Okay, we're just dead." So they scoop it up.
But he didn't have the
and
card.
He didn't
have
literally
the
didn't have it in there.
Wow.
So there's a really good video. We'll link that because there's a video of him telling that story. So we'll post that as well, along with the Randy Johnson vaporizing the bird. it's a cool story too. But like, so has there ever been a situation where you've done that kind of a bluff where you've had somebody scoop? Based on, okay, so let's hear it.
It's not a scooping bluff, but there's a young gentleman that plays at our shop, and he's a really good kid. So we're playing Modern, and he's playing Red Green Ponza, and I'm playing Burn. And I do believe this is game two. I maul down to five, he mauls down to five, and I'm hemming and hawing over it. And since I'm going first, I get to choose if I'm going to keep my hand before he does. So I start tapping the table and counting. I'm like, this is a turn three kill. And he goes, mulligan, immediately.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I'm just like, okay. And all I had was like a goblin guide and a couple lands and a lightning bolt in hand. So then he goes down to his five. So that was mulligan to five. So mulligan's down to four. And he's like, okay, I guess I got to keep this. And then I show him my hand afterwards. And I'm like, this is what my hand was. And he's like, oh, I am never listening to you again.
Well, that's also, we mentioned this last week, but Max, your Demonic Tutor bluff. Why don't you relay that one more time real quick about whenever someone Demonic Tutors and you do the...
Oh, I do what Chris does. What'd you get?
Yep. Always ask.
Because Vamp Tutor, well, not Vamp Tutor's fine too, but like most of the other tutors, the non-black ones, you have to reveal what the card is. But you guys frequently say, what'd you get?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's a, you know, non-reveal tutor. And more often than you would think, people show you. I've done it before.
Yep.
I've actually just revealed it by accident before, you know,
sure.
Just going in tutor and I like flip it over and I'm like, oh, well, I guess I'm just going to cast this right now too, I guess.
It works really well when you're actually having a conversation with the player.
If they're distracted,
and like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're talking. Oh, yeah, that's great about your wife. What'd you get now? Oh, yeah, I got this.
Oh, now we're going into naughty territory in gaming. This is going to remind me of the whole Sylvan Library, let's shuffle Ugin to the top of my deck thing.
What?
Well, I got one more than...
We'll link that one, too.
Sure, <okay. laughs> The closest I have to the LSV thing, and this was playing a game against our friend Luke Witten, who Max and I used to host a podcast with years ago. We mentioned it last week, I think.
Yep.
And it was down to him and I in a game, and I had a mono black... Draena, whatever the first Draena's name was, who have Calostria High Chief. And I went to, we were both down to like minimal life, and I went to, I can't remember what the spell was, but like I had a way to deal direct damage to him. I believe it was the black draw spell, draw like six cards, and the person takes whatever X damage it is. This name I've now forgotten, from Khanza Tarkir. Damnable Pact.
Yep.
So I went to, and I had a bunch of mana, because mono black, and I had some kind of mana doubler, and I had a Cabal Coffers. But I knew he had some kind of a counter spell, so I went and did just lethal to him with Damnable Pact, and he countered it. I'm like, all right, can you deal with Draena? And I pumped Draena and swung. And he's like, no, I got it and scooped. I didn't have lethal on Draena. I didn't have
really?
Enough, I did not have enough black mana to pump her up for lethal. I just said, can you deal with Draena? He's like, no, you got it. And scooped it up. And I was, I think, too short.
Wow.
This is why we count children?
Right. And you know what? I didn't tell him either afterwards because, number one, he'd have been mad. Like, he would have been irate about that. So if he's listening now, Luke, remember that game, that's what happened. I didn't tell him afterwards, but I bluffed that I had lethal and he scooped it. So I'm like, nope, I'll take that win.
Sometimes that happens. I see that a lot in Modern, since it is. I keep talking about Modern. I love Modern, just so everybody
knows.
Well,
the same stuff applies.
Right.
Yeah. And,
it's Modern season.
Yeah, it is Modern season. Storm and Modern. A lot of times they start storming out, and they don't have the lethal in their hand, and I've watched a lot of people scoop.
And if they screw that up, they're just done.
Yeah.
Like if they misplay storm, they're just not going to kill
I you. Make them play it out because they could whiff.
Right.
Yep.
They might not have the grape shot or the goblin maker thing in hand or whatever, so they're just like going and going and going. All of a sudden, like, well, I guess I got like 12 floating mana. I'm at storm count 20, and I'm just done.
Particularly at your LGS, like maybe in the pro level, those guys don't miss that very
yep.
often. But if you're playing in your local game store, storm's really easy to mess up.
It is.
So yeah, no, that's a bluff but you can win doing that too. Like, people absolutely pull out games faking that kind of stuff. There's one I wanted to touch on that I noticed last night, and I'm trying to figure out how to bluff this or how to take advantage of it. I was playing my Mina and Den deck, and I had played a Crucible of Worlds.
Yep.
And just the conversation at the table was about how Crucible needs a reprint because it's so expensive. And somebody made the offhand comment about ramming up Excavator. Like,
yep.
Oh, you know, that's a good card. It's like kind of fills the same slot, plus it's a body. You know, it's a Naga Shaman, I think they called it. And I corrected them, like, oh, it's Naga Cleric. Oh, okay. And then I'm like, then I froze, and I'm like,
you just had
I
it
looked
in your
around, because I have it in my hand, I'm staring at it. That's why I know it's Naga Cleric. Like, I'm not going to remember what Excavator is. I just happen to have it there in hand.
Yep.
And it didn't matter. It's not like I already have a Crucible that no one's removed.
Yeah.
So clearly I can play cards in my graveyard, and having a second way to do that in my hand isn't a big deal. But I did, because I knew we were doing this show, I had to like freeze and be like, okay, there's something here, but I don't quite know what it is by like giving that away, and no one caught it either. But I'm like, man, there's a bluff there somehow, and I don't really know what it is yet. But at the very least, I gave away information I didn't have to. Like, if someone was paying attention, they would have caught that, because not only did I give it away, the reaction on my face after I said it was clear that I had it in my hand. I caught myself by surprise.
I wasn't even paying attention, because
yeah.
I heard you say it. Like, there was a delay. Oh, no, it's a cleric. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. Dana knows.
I was literally staring at it in
card.
My hand, and then I froze, and I was like, I guess it doesn't matter, and no one noticed, so we're cool.
Yep.
But that was information I gave away that I didn't have to.
I've never really been in that situation.
And how often does that really happen? But it does
yep.
happen. I guess I've had it happen before where someone's like, does Dreadbore or Terminate, which one is Instant Speed or something? What, you know, that's not a good example. But like,
I just remember this from last
and
night.
And you're like, Terminate, because it's in my hand. But like, you know, like that's happened before where someone's asked like a specific wording question and you've had the card in hand.
I've done that before, but yeah, it's hard to make it into a bluff, I think.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how you would fool someone. I really like Therese Nielsen's art for blah blah blah. She didn't do art on that. That was done by, you know, because you're holding the card. So don't do that if you're giving away information,
right.
Or if you can find a way to fake that out by having the information in your head and like acting like you're holding the card. Then I guess do that.
I guess it might just be a good way to bluff out, like, especially if you're way ahead on board, and if say you have like another Wrath or something, you guys are already indestructible. You know, then you can start bluffing cards that could be in your hand, and maybe they actually are in your hand type of deal, and then people are kind of like sketched out to play anything into the board.
Now, have you guys noticed this? If you talk too much trash, like just with friends, but like if you are constantly talking trash, it makes it difficult to bluff sometimes because you're just constantly saying nonsense. So when you try to bluff someone, that doesn't matter because you've been talking garbage all game long.
Yeah, I've had that.
Because I've
times.
Found that before some nights, particularly like some nights. Because it usually doesn't transfer from game to game. But, like, there's some nights when you're playing with the same three people every pod, and everyone's just talking garbage the entire time for the fun of it. And suddenly you're like, I want to bluff, but I really can't because I've just been saying ridiculous things the entire game.
It's, like, every week for me.
Well, I think Friday night you and I playing with the doctors had that a little bit because we were, like, just laughing and just
yeah.
talking trash the entire time. And at one point I was like, I can't bluff anything here because no one's going to believe me. I've already threatened. I've already announced I have 7 counterspells in my hand at one point in time. So the fact that I have 2 doesn't matter now.
Right. Ew. I did the, how much mana do you have, Max? Enough. Just, right. I knew what you were talking about. Enough.
I'll be fine. Don't you worry about it. So any special things for baiting out counter spells? Because that's a big deal in a lot of formats, too. I mean, that's not even, like, a sneaky thing. That's something that you have to actually think about in a lot of formats.
I actually saw something today. I was down at our LGS today, and they're having the store championship tonight. And I was watching my close friend, who we do a lot of playtesting. We borrow cards back and forth. His name's Nate. And he was playing in the standard for the store championship. And he's playing a mirror match. He's playing Grixis control against blue-black control. And he played a Scarab God into open mana. And immediately got countered. And after that, then he played Glintsleeve Siphoner, which gives you an energy when it enters, and then during your upkeep, you can pay 2 energy, lose 1 life to draw an additional card.
Okay.
And that guy resolved, because he baited out the counter spell with Scarab God. Well, I asked him later about it, and he said, in a control matchup, because he is a control player through and through, he's like, card advantage is more valuable than that body of the Scarab God.
So it was worth losing the Scarab God to get that draw.
Yep. And a lot of times, people don't worry about a 2-1 with Menace on the board.
Right.
You know, if they can kill with any of the removal spells. Well, apparently the guy didn't have any. So he baited out the major card and then dropped the little guy to get his card advantage on.
Nice. So how often in Commander do you actually try to bait out the counter?
I usually don't because I forget counter spells are a thing in Commander. Because who plays counter spells in Commander? Like, really?
I do.
Well, plus, Commander, you have the problem where if there's multiple players, it's much tougher to bait out a counter when there's 4 players than there is in a 1v1 game.
Yep. I mean, I suppose if I'm in a multiplayer game and I'm playing against one of you guys in your major blue decks or whatever and you're tapped out, I'll jam in the threat and be like, you got force. If you don't, I'm just coming after you.
I typically try to figure out which is the worst thing to lose. Like if I'm looking at a Mirari's Wake and a Sylvan Library, I'll try to bait with the Sylvan Library and then play the Mirari's Wake. Or if for some reason I need better card draw, I'll play the Mirari's Wake to bait the counter spell because it is probably the bigger threat. And drop that Sylvan Library and nobody cares.
I suppose that we could go into, with that also being, since those are both enchantments, baiting out the removal.
I was going to say, like, if anything, it's more of a bait the removal spell than it is bait the counter spell, probably more often than not. Or you're in a situation where you see someone's played their Mari's Wake and it sat there for almost a full swing on the board and you're like, I don't have removal, but if that's allowed to sit there, my doubling season's probably okay.
Because
but if that person's been allowed to untap with a Mari's Wake, no one has a removal spell in hand right now.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because if they did, they would have hit that Mari's Wake immediately, or that Mana Reflection, or that doubling season, and you've got a pair of lives in hand, and there's a doubling season sitting there, you're safe to play that.
Yes.
And I've done that before, too, where, like, okay, I want this, like I said, Sylvan Library and Mari's Wake, and you, like, I'm happy with either of them, and if they hit that Mari's Wake right away, that's fine. I'll get the Sylvan Library out.
Yep.
So, because what's also sometimes annoying is Mari's Wake, you want to get out first so you have mana free.
Yeah.
You have to make that decision, too. Like, okay, well, if it's going to get countered, then I'm not going to have enough mana to do what else I want to do. But if it doesn't get countered, I can tap for 6 quick and do 2 things then.
Yep.
All right. Any other special, like, mind games you guys see a lot or you guys like to do with people?
The biggest one that I see, and I'm not going to say that I've done it a few times, but I don't actually enjoy doing it or watching people do it, is when seasoned players goad the new player to do something.
Sure. I would agree with that.
It's a tactic that's a mind game tactic because they're going to trust your judgment on stuff. And a lot of times the judgment is skewed in your favor, which is something that I don't like seeing happen, but I can honestly say I've done it before.
Oh, yeah, I'm guilty of it.
You know, I even try to avoid doing, like, most mind games to new players. Like, if a new player's coming at me, I'm probably not going to do the, I got a one white mana free and a Sword of Plowshares in hand. To a new player, I'm probably not going to do that. Whereas with you guys, I absolutely will have no qualms whatsoever about bluffing that.
Yeah, I guess I agree. I try to tone it back with newer players, but, I mean, it happens. If it's coming down to surviving the game or not, you got to do a little bit of the mind games, I think.
But if you play a Jenga Texas on me, then you're just, I don't even care anymore.
I wonder who that's directed at.
Oh, and speaking of that, you know, I'm going to stop harassing him about him because someone played a freaking Vorinclex on me last night.
For free.
The worst part
of it. Dirty man, you
for
dirty
free.
Man.
He played it for free.
I know.
He did off of Genesis Wave. And for 23. And I already had a Cage Sun, a Vernal Bloom, and an Extra Planar Lens in play.
And the Mana Reflection?
Oh, no, it was Mana Reflection instead of Cage Sun.
Yep.
Because I was tapping forests for...
Nine.
Yeah, something stupid.
Yeah, it mine was just, tapped for it was two. Gross. Now I know where he got the Jinga taxes from. I understand now.
He learned from watching me. So the one I want to ask you guys about in particular, because I know when this happened, it always makes for a little good interaction, is lying about agreeing to not attack someone in a game.
We have a lot of expensive equipment here. Do we want to go into this story?
How valid of a mind game is that? Chris, I'll ask you first.
It's been 3 years.
But he remembers it.
I do remember, because the deck's put back together now, too.
Especially now.
That's how I taunted him
with
it.
So do you take that into account? Because the one time Max backstabbed you in a game.
I do a lot now.
with him especially?
Well, not so much anymore.
The sacred bond.
His decks aren't quite as much of a, I'm going to just kill you immediately on the crackback type of deal. But a lot of times, you know, when someone's like, oh, yeah, you know, if you kill him, I want to attack you. And it's like, I look over at what they're playing, what kind of lands they have, and I'm just like, no. But speaking of that, it reminds me of a cardboard crack comic of a group of EDH players sitting there and having the same discussion and a guy pulling out a contract for them to sign.
Lovely. I'm sure our LGS will have those in the coming weeks.
So having once broken the solemn pact, Max, I don't think you've ever done it since then or again. Is that intentional? You're like, okay, I did it once. I don't want
to
like.
I don't intentionally do it
untrustworthy.
I don't intentionally do it to Chris anymore. Mainly because he'll just punch me now. We know each other well enough. He'll just hit me. There are times where I will persuade my opponents to maybe, hey, if you use your removal spell on that really threatening thing, I have lethal on them. I'm next.
Sure.
Well, if that really threatening thing that they just destroyed was their only threat, you know, if they're a mono white deck and they killed that Sun Titan and that was really their only engine, cool, I have a few turns, I can deal with him. You have no resources, you had to tap out to help me, I am going to kill you because I can't deal with you in two or three turns.
That makes sense.
That's typically where I draw the line now with breaking the sacred bond of the agreement. is the type of deck they helped me to remove. If I can deal with them in the late game versus the five-color Ur Dragon player, I can't face down a bunch of dragons with Tajik. I do need to kill you now.
Yep.
The one I do that's kind of tangential to that is kind of that thing with your brother or sister in the backseat of the car where they're like, well, technically I'm not touching you by putting my hand right in front of your face. So, like, I've done that before where someone's like, so do you have any flyers out over there? I'm not going to lie and say, no, I have no flyers, but I will absolutely be like, yeah, no, I don't have any flyers when I have, like, a spider with reach or something. I've done that before.
I remember that game, too.
I do not feel remotely bad about that because if you asked me directly, if you just said, do I have reach? I'd be like, yeah, I've got something with reach. Yeah.
And now everything is, do you have any flying or reach over there?
Yeah. But, like, I don't feel bad about that kind of misdirection. Yep. Like, if someone asks you a question specifically and you can answer it truthfully without kind of sidestepping the truth there. Like, can you draw two cards this next turn? No, I can't, but I have a Sylvan Library, which is not a draw effect. It's a replacement effect.
Yep.
That might be, I mean, there's ways you can get around the letter of the law. And I'm like, you can't hold that against me. I'm just being smart.
I've seen people, going back to bluffs, so they've done, like, brainstorm and be like, yep, I'm going to leave this one here, knowing that they run, like, miracle cards.
Okay.
And then they set up their next turn, and nope, they didn't.
It's nothing. But if it is, because it's been there before.
Yep, Terminus, Reforged Soul, anything like that.
This isn't so much a bluff so much as it is just like maybe being gun-shy, but I think we mentioned in the show, too, like 6 months ago, somebody had it was an Insanguinate or what it was. They got mana tithed for Debt
to
the Deathless, okay. For the mana tithe for one. I don't even remember whose mana tithe that was and what deck it is.
Lucas's.
Is that who it was?
One of his Orzhov partner decks.
One of his 15 Orzhov decks.
Our Abzan deck. Oh, it was Anafenza 1v1 deck.
Oh, but, no.
but ever since then, whenever I've done like an X cast big spell, I've been leaving one mana open. Like, I don't remember whose mana tithe that was, but somewhere in this shop right now, there's a mana tithe in one of these decks, and that white player has one mana open, and that white player has one mana open. I'm like, I'm only going to Genesis Wave for 18 instead of 19 because I want to leave that one mana free.
Well, you did something similar with Syncopate last night. You countered something, and you knew the player didn't have any extra. He tapped out to do something.
Yep, and I was able to counter it for one. So it cost me this 2-mana counter spell and a syncopate.
And you exiled it in that Kess deck.
Yes, I did.
Which was a big deal against Kess. Yeah. I think, man, we've covered a lot. Is there any specific ones here before we move on to the end of the show? That's a lot of like mind game stuff you can do in the game, though.
No, there's nothing I can really think of.
This whole episode was a mind game. Stay tuned for the real topic.
And none of us are wearing deodorant. everyone's checking. am I not? So if you guys have any cool mind games, things you do, things you've seen, let us know on social media. It's always fun to hear back from real players with real experiences. So before we sign off here, we have done this for a few weeks.
Quite a while.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've done our sign-off question. So the sign-off question we're going to do, we're going to try to get back to doing this every week. So sometimes Wizards prints a functional reprint of a card. So like Terramorphic Expanse is basically Evolving Wilds, or Deglamour is Unravel the Aether. So if there was a card that they would realistically do another version of, because they're not going to print a second Soul Ring or a second Lightning Bolt, what commander card would you like to see them do a functional reprint of? What do you got? You guys are both smiling here.
Lightning Bolt?
Lightning Bolt, right.
I was waiting for you, Max, because when you and I talked about this earlier, he goes, I'm going to say Sol Ring just to troll Dana.
I specifically put the caveat. Sol Ring was the obvious one, but I'm like, if I don't say Lightning Bolt, Chris is going to say Lightning Bolt. So I like need to make sure when I text him, say not Lightning Bolt or Sol Ring.
Mine would have to be Blasphemous Act.
Second Blasphemous Act. That's so good. That is such a great card.
That does like the damage like that, but costs X amount less because of X, you know, like X and Y or whatever type of deal.
Oh, and we were just talking about Hour of Revelation being how good that is in white, too. Like,
yep, it's very similar, but I want it to be red. Come on.
It has to be red, sure.
You know how I roll.
How about you, Max? What do you got?
A functional reprint of something like Sky Shroud Claim, but for not forests. So go grab plains or mountains.
Sure. In green, but you have to get plains or something to make it not quite as good. Because Sky Shroud Claim is
really good.
Fantastic. All right, mine would be Night's Whisper. And I know we already have Sign and Blood, but like at 4 mana, we have Ambition's Cost and Ancient Craving, which are kind of similar. And the problem with Sign and Blood is that double black, particularly like on turn 3, because there's enough times when turn 3 rolls around, you're like, I really, you know, I kept this hand because there was 2 lands and a Soul Ring and a Night's Whisper. And if you have that hand, you're like, I'll be fine. Because I can, even if I don't draw land in those first 3 turns, I'll Night's Whisper down 2 more and I'll hit it.
Yep.
Whereas Sign and Blood, you're like, I might not have that double black to do it. So Night's Whisper, even though you can't target it at somebody, that's much less relevant in EDH than it is in Standard, where 2 mana can make a difference and can kill somebody. It's not going to ever happen in Commander, really. So I wish there was that, like a functional Night's Whisper reprint, just to have a second one in a deck, because I would absolutely run that over Sign and Blood. And that's a doable card I think they could print.
I know,
version.
I would run it.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll print something like that in Standard at 2 mana because everything seems to be 3 mana now. They printed,
they're
2 more 3 mana ones that are just like Read the Bones.
Read the Bones, then we had 2 that were not as good as Read the Bones. Yep. Although one was Instant Speed, and one was just a Read the Bones without a Scry, so it's just a bad card. But
what can you do?
What do you do? All right. Well, that was our show. If it was real, we don't know. We'll be back next week talking about Dominaria and probably the week after as well. So until then, I'm Dana.
I'm Max.
And I'm Chris.